Welcome to God and Country Radio, a weekend program that discusses current social, political, economic, and prophetic events in the light of biblical theology. I'm your host, Pastor Brad Winship, pastor of Harbor Bible Church in Central Jersey. The big talk last week was the depraved opening ceremony of the Summer Olympics. Do we expect anything different? Back in 2022, at the Euro Commonwealth Summer Games, the opening ceremony was full-on Baal worship, where hundreds of stage actors were bowing down to a 30-foot mechanical bull. And this year, three drag queens carried the Olympic torch through its final journey through France. And this is no surprise because the Olympic opening ceremony is based on overtly pagan ritual, Vestal virgins worshiping at the Temple of Hera. Now, the big controversy was the bizarre stage act where drag queens sat at a table mimicking the picture of Da Vinci's painting of the Last Supper. At this, all of the media erupted that Christians were offended by the Olympic Committee putting drag queens in place of the apostles, because now a group is being offended. But I suspect that if it weren't for the Last Supper mockery, not a word would have been said or could have been said against the event, because tolerance and acceptance and moral diversity are considered the highest values. So LGBTQ imagery needs to be accepted, apparently. But regardless of the Last Supper scene, the entire Olympic opening ceremony was just as bad, just as depraved. Men exposing their genitals, men gyrating over children, simulating sex, stage actors wearing Baphomet pendants around their neck, and there was a stage prop where there was a large head of a golden bull. They love their golden calves. Now, of course, the Olympic Committee defended the opening ceremony by claiming the goal of community tolerance was achieved. And this is their ideology, that LGBTQ, this kind of sexual deviance, needs to be included in society. Nobody gets othered. And these people are even welcomed to Jesus' table, to Jesus' Last Supper. The artistic director of the event, Thomas Jolly, is a homosexual and avid LGBTQ advocate. His rationale for the event was, quote, "In France, we have the right to love each other." And, quote, "I want to make a ceremony that repairs, reconciles, and reaffirms the value of our republic, liberty, equality, and fraternity," unquote. And that is the new modernist basis for ethics, giving people freedom and accepting all deviants. And by the way, that's the platform Kamala Harris is running on. She's all about freedom, LGBTQ freedom, abortion freedom. Now, on the NBC Today show, they characterize the situation this way, quote, "During the controversial tableau, drag queens and dancers lined a long table in an image that some thought resembled Leonardo da Vinci's The Last Supper, a portrait of Jesus Christ and his 12 apostles. Following the scene, some called the imagery a mockery and an insult to Christian people. Meanwhile, others found the moment a celebration for the LGBTQ plus community and inclusivity." So there you have it, two worldviews, one that believes in the law of nature, nature's God, and the other, a humanistic worldview of human moral autonomy. The artistic director is now claiming that the Last Supper was not his inspiration, but the Greek feast of Bacchanalia, a feast of immorality and drunkenness, celebrating the god Dionysus. You know, many on the left took to social media to criticize the Christian community for being so naive, so superstitious, so judgmental. Let me read this one post to give you a sense of the argument here. This is from someone named Lady Francis. Quote, "I'm about to step on some toes in regard to the opening ceremony at the Paris Olympics. The headless woman was Marie Antoinette. She ruled over France and was found guilty of treason, conspiracy, and stealing from the country. Sound familiar? So notice there, she's trying to make a dig against Donald Trump. She goes on, also was not the Last Supper. It was a depiction of the ancient Greek Bacchanalia, because you know the Olympics are ancient and Greek. Surprise. And if you didn't know, a Bacchanalia is an uncontrollable, promiscuous, extravagant, and loud party. The party often spans several days, which honors the god of wine, Bacchus. The blue guy covered in grapevines is also known as Dionysus, the Greek god of fertility, later known as the god of wine and pleasure. And finally, it was not death on that pale horse. It was Sequana, the god of scene, the river on which the boat procession took place. She was meant to be the representation of the Olympic spirit of Sequana. If some of you weren't so busy trying to end the Department of Education, you might know this. Unquote. And quite a few leftist evangelicals have made comments embarrassed over the alleged Christian misrepresentation of the opening ceremony. Well, first of all, such explanation of the imagery doesn't sanctify the ceremony. It only makes it worse. It only shows it for what it is: pagan immorality and hedonism. Second, the central figure at the table, an obese woman, is wearing a diadem on her head. And the actors around the table were positioned like Da Vinci's portrait. So how naive do you think Christians are? Of course, the art director had the Last Supper in mind. And of course, he's going to lie about it, doing parodies on the Last Supper so as to include deviants at the Last Supper has been a common practice for years. Just go to the internet and you'll find hundreds of Last Supper parodies with Star Wars characters and movie stars and cartoons. It's really the apologists for the ceremony who are the culturally naive and who refuse to admit the ideology of their own people. And, you know, I suspect that they're actually trying to mock us by gaslighting us, because they know perfectly well it was a depiction of the Last Supper. Most people don't realize that ancient idolatry came with sophisticated rationalization. The Baal worshippers wouldn't say, "We are worshiping a bull." But they claimed to be celebrating strength and fertility and labor. And aren't all of those good virtues? Shouldn't we celebrate those virtues? And all of the worship of the Greek gods was celebrating some aspect of human life. Beautiful things in life, things created by God. But that's exactly the error of idolatry. Not the worship of a stone, but celebrating and honoring human experiences over God. In Revelation chapter 13, the whole world will worship the beast, the globalist government of men. And don't imagine that this means some sort of religious ceremony. Now, that may occur in some places, but worship simply means ascribing worth to something. And the whole world worshiping the beast simply means that the world will admire and identify with the ideology of the Antichrist agenda. They will give it worth. And all of the same types of excuses used to justify the idolatry at the Olympics will be used to justify the religious-like adoration of the beast in the Revelation. The sin of idolatry is more subtle than most people realize. And these people who are Olympic ceremony apologists are like the people described in John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. They are Mr. and Mrs. Love the World. Now, by the way, with all of the satanic symbols at the Olympics, an Olympic surfer from Brazil was banned from having a picture of the Rio de Janeiro statue of Jesus on a surfboard. Notice what's accepted and what's not accepted. And one more interesting comment. Someone posted on social media that after seeing the Olympic opening ceremony, quote, "I am seriously thinking about converting to Christianity." And the lesson is, the explosion of evil in the last days becomes more proof that God's word is true, and it will awaken those God will save. Well, here's the Bible lesson for today. These events are all signs that we are in the great apostasy prophesied in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. The Olympic opening ceremony is not some outlying situation. Leaders in politics, in academia, in business are all embracing the new religion of LGBTQ and humanism. What is considered virtue today is the affirmation of all human desires. The Christian belief of submitting to the moral law of God is anathema. And this is the Psalm chapter 2 prophecy. "The kings of the earth take their stand, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed," or the Messiah, "saying, let us tear their fetters apart and cast away their cords from us." And this is how our age will end before the coming of Christ. A great rebellion against God will break out. Now, for years, I've been pointing out that we may be experiencing the prophecy of 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, which tells us that the day of the Lord will not come unless the apostasy comes first. Now, I've always tried to be careful in this, because every time evil proliferates in a country throughout the church age, it didn't mean that the prophesied great apostasy was upon us. So I've always tried to say, just consider that we may be experiencing the fulfillment of this prophecy, that this may be the likely explanation for the dramatic social change we're seeing around us. This complete abandon of Christian morality, justified in the name of freedom, and justified in the name of affirming and loving people. But nevertheless, there is going to be a point at which the Christian community is going to have to identify the signs of the time and believe and apply the prophecy. It won't be a question of maybe, but this is actually what's happening. The whole point of this prophecy in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 is that Paul is telling the church that this is what they need to look for in order to identify the coming day of the Lord. Just like Jesus said in Matthew chapter 24, when you see these signs, when you see these things, recognize that the coming of the Lord is near. In the church of Thessalonica, some of the Christians believed that the day of the Lord, the time of the great tribulation, had arrived. At this time, Rome was fighting Israel. The temple would soon be destroyed and Jerusalem burned to the ground. But Paul writes to the Thessalonians that they're not currently in the day of the Lord, because two signs must come first. Two signs that the church is to look for and identify, so as to know when the day of the Lord has actually come. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 3, "Let no one in any way deceive you, for it will not come unless the apostasy comes first, and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction." What comes first? Before the day of the Lord, and before the revealing of the Antichrist, there comes the apostasy. So this is what I'd like to explain again. You know, I've covered this text many, many times in past programs. But Philippians chapter 3, verse 3. "To write the same thing again is no trouble to me, and it's a safeguard for you." And 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 is the premier prophetic text to guide the church in the last days, to explain to the church what to look for, what's happening around them, lest believers become discouraged or confused. Now, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 has become a neglected prophecy for a number of reasons. Some Christian leaders don't want to predict times and seasons, and rightly so. Also, many Christian leaders would rather explain the outbreak of evil to common causes rather than to a dispensation of God removing his restraint. And third, many Christian leaders place the apostasy as something that happens after the rapture of the church. But nevertheless, here are 4 points about the apostasy prophesied in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. Points from the text itself that should shed some better light on the prophecy. Point number 1. The apostasy is not strictly religious. When we hear the English word apostasy, it carries in our day a religious connotation. An apostate is a religious heretic. So a common interpretation of this verse is that it refers to denominational religious departure from the faith. That this is a falling away from the faith within Christian religious institutions. And that's certainly happening in our day and will happen in the future. This word apostasy certainly includes religious apostasy. But the Greek word apostasia has nothing to do with religion. It simply means rebellion. Most often a rebellion against civil authorities. So the apostasy is describing a worldwide rebellion against God, not just a religious one, or not just confined to religious circles. Like in Revelation chapter 20, when the nations of the earth come to battle the camp of the saints, or like the rebellion at the Tower of Babel. Also, apparently, in Paul making reference to the apostasy, these early Christians knew about and assumed that there would be a great worldwide rebellion against God at the end of this age. Now, Bible students will say, hasn't the world always been in rebellion to God? So this must be describing an apostasy in Christendom, or of those previously obedient to God. Well, historically, the world has not been in complete rebellion to God. The nations were generally theistic and believed in the Genesis natural laws concerning marriage and gender and the division of the nations. What's being described in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 is the world going into a stage of complete rebellion where the world embraces the satanic religion that man himself is God and agrees with Satan's claims against God. And that brings me to my second point about the apostasy, defining the essence of it. What truth is being rejected and what lie is being embraced? And given what we read in the book of the Revelation, the rebellion, the apostasy, is against the authority of God himself, where mankind and mankind's government declares themselves to be God, where mankind, like Satan, declares himself independent from God, and independence from God becomes the ultimate virtue. Again, the messianic prophecy of Psalm chapter 2. It says that the kings of the earth conspire to throw off the rules of God. So Christians should discern the rhetoric pushing this ideology, the use of words such as freedom and democracy. Politicians are not using these words in the traditional sense anymore, that we should have freedom from tyrannical evil government. But freedom now means you should have the freedom to be morally autonomous, freedom to have an abortion, freedom to practice LGBTQ, freedom to do drag queen story hours in schools. So given the way these terms are now being defined, Christians are actually opposed to freedom, to equality, to diversity, to tolerance, to affirming, because now it's all about the approval of evil. So point number one, the apostasy is worldwide, it's humanism, it's not just religion. Point number two, the apostasy is all about human autonomy from God. Point number three, the apostasy does not begin on day one of the Great Tribulation, the Day of the Lord. It precedes the Day of the Lord, and the Day of the Lord, the revelation, cannot take place until the apostasy occurs. Because it's the apostasy that creates the ideological foundation to ready the world to embrace the satanic Antichrist agenda. And there's no reason not to see the apostasy that must come first as occurring over a generation before the Day of the Lord. There's no indication in the text that the apostasy is to be viewed as God flipping a switch so that in one day this rebellion against God grows up overnight. The usual way apostasies happen in Scripture is over a number of years. Satan has to work through natural means over time, raising up false teachers, the writing of philosophical books, the influence of the media. So let me suggest that the apostasy could have begun at the beginning of the 20th century. the 20th century being the age of secularism. And Satan has been working over the last three generations to throw off the Christian culture. And it has taken about three generations to erode and erase the power of the Christian culture. So the bottom line is, if we interpret the apostasy as something that takes place on day one of the Great Tribulation, I believe we'll miss the point of the prophecy. The apostasy must come first before the man of sin is revealed. And the church is to identify the apostasy as a sign of the time. Point number four. The coming of the apostasy is explained later in chapter 2 as God removing his restraint. 2 Thessalonians 2:7. He who now restrains will do so until he's taken out of the way. God no longer does his work of restraining. The church is to know that there will be a period of time at the end of the church age where God will no longer restrain sin, the sin of the unsaved, but let the unsaved follow their natural proclivities. And this is also telling us that throughout the church age, God has been restraining sin. Otherwise, the world would have gone into the apocalypse in the first century. Well, the point is that at the end of this age, before the coming of Christ, God is going to withhold the reestablishment of his authority, as he has often done year after year throughout human history. As in Acts chapter 12, Herod put James to death and glorified himself, and the angel of the Lord struck Herod dead. King Nebuchadnezzar boasted, and God struck him with mental illness for 7 years. Abimelech took Sarah from Abraham, and God came to him and said, "You're a dead man." And God allowed the evil Pharaoh of the Exodus to be raised to power, but soon took him down when he got in the way of God's program. In Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 32, God pronounced that the false prophet Shemaiah would die because he preached rebellion against the Lord. The Greek word there in the Septuagint is the word apostasia. He preached apostasy against the Lord. So recognize that at any given time, God could take out the designers of the Olympic opening ceremony. God could have kept these men from ever coming into the position of influence. But in the final apostasy, God is stepping back, and God will step back from his usual restraint in the world in order to allow sin, the sin that normally resides in the unsaved heart, to come to the surface. And that's the biblical explanation for why the great apostasy occurs and how it's allowed to occur. God removes his restraint and God exposes sin before he judges it. It's not that humanity was better in the past and evil in the future. It's not that the final generation has more evil in their hearts than previous generations. It's only because God is no longer restraining sin. Now, this advent, this dispensation of God called the apostasy, is going to require great faith on the part of God's people. Faith in the prophecy itself, that this is God's plan, and faith to believe that God is and that God is active, because when evil proliferates and is left untouched, people begin to doubt God. Unbelief increases. But Christians need to hold on to the prophecy and the prophetic explanation, and rather than listening to the message of the world, put their faith in the message of God. Judgment Day is right around the corner. As it was in the days of Noah, so it shall also be in the coming of the Son of Man. You've been listening to God and Country Radio. The radio website to listen to this program again is godandcountryradio.org. Just spell it out, godandcountryradio.org. The extended video YouTube and Rumble editions of this program are at my channel, God and Country Biblical Exposition. Thanks for listening. Stand firm in the truth, and may Jesus Christ reign.